You're listening to Mocha Macabre.
Welcome to Mocha Macabre, your haunted happy hour. Hold the wine, but bring the coffee. I'm your host, James, from iMonster.com, and every week I serve you a fresh cup of the paranormal, real-life hauntings, eerie encounters, and the unexplained. All with a splash of cream in a latte to die for. So grab your favorite mug, settle in, and sip something sinister. This is Mocha Macabre. Have you ever encountered something weird in your house? Something ominous? Perhaps you don't even know it's paranormal. Just slightly odd, leading the way to paranormal activity. On this episode of Mocha Macabre, we have a few weird stories for you that might make your spine tingle just a little bit. Or maybe it's all the coffee you're drinking. So today I want to try something a little different. If you've ever listened to the podcast called My Favorite Murder, it's these two ladies who are recounting these crazy murder cases. But since there's two of them, they get to feed off of each other and, you know, make jokes on the side, talk about the cases, and I simply love it. So today I invited somebody who's really close to me to see if we have similar, well, maybe not similar, but something good so that we can maybe do this again in the future and make the podcast a little more interesting. Because after all, it is for the people who are listening to Mocha Macabre. So the more interesting, the more entertaining, the more people will like it. So here it goes. So can you please introduce yourself?
I go by Rasmus, a Danish name, but you're welcome to Americanize it to Rasmus. And yeah, James has invited me to join him, and I am very happy to be here.
So tell me, Rasmus, are you a believer in the paranormal or a non-believer?
I am fervently a believer in I don't know. I've never seen a ghost, but I believe that other people have seen ghosts if they feel that they've seen them. I'm not going to tell them or deny them the idea that what they've seen isn't what their reality is. So, but I have never personally seen a ghost. Okay, so James has asked me to read a story. I hate backseat drivers, but have you ever wondered what it would be like to drive with a dead person in your car?
It's funny you asked that question, because I don't know that anybody has ever asked me that question. And honestly, I don't make it a habit to drive with dead bodies in the backseat of my car.
I will say generally I don't as well.
But I have to say, it does not sound like a good thing.
Yeah. For the high, I'm on the higher percentage level of not driving around with dead people in my car. But yeah, this story might be worse. So Salt Ride 2288 writes, I, a 24-year-old female, pass by the same stretch of road almost every night. For about 5 years, off and on, I kept feeling like someone was in the backseat of my car as I drove at night, always between 9 p.m. and 12 a.m. She's very specific about the times here. Without me knowing, my mother was also experiencing this, as was my best friend. Only recently did we figure this out, and my mother and I started talking about it, only to discover that we often have the same image in our minds of what this woman looks like. Late 1800s to early 1900s clothing. She's got a high collar, button-up shirt, and a long plaid skirt. Now this, just screams, Mormon pioneer to me. Her face is pointy. She continues, her face is pointy with sunken eyes and aged features, yet she doesn't appear to be older than 70. A few months ago, I was driving home from my friend's house and I got the feeling that she was in the car with me. The air was extra heavy, as if she were inches from my face. When I passed by a house with an outside light on, I could see the outline of someone sitting in my passenger seat. It was like a gray fog or mist, and then an almost clear face, and she looked exactly like how my mother and I described her. Now, because I do believe in ghosts, but I also believe in seeing faces and things that might not be faces, kind of, I guess she's kind of referring to Virgin Mary stuff there. Anyway, she continues, I made sure...
I like how you just dropped the Virgin Mary in there.
Well, she seems to appear out of nowhere everywhere. So she's a very popular figure in things like toast and trees and yeah.
Okay. I have to stop you there for a second because I just have to talk about our setup here. So it's a high tech studio. So this is the first time I'm recording with another person. And if you've heard the last couple of episodes of Mocha Macabre, then you probably are aware that it's usually just me, but I am here with Rasmus at his house, but he is sitting outside in his deck and I can see him through the window. I kind of feel like we're in our own recording radio station where he's talking to me. I can hear him through microphones and see him speak, but we're not in the same room together. And I just thought that was, it could be either pretty cool or pretty weird.
And I'm not sure why we had to be naked for this, James, but I guess I'll do whatever you tell me to do. But yeah.
We're not, but yeah.
But yeah. So it makes for a fun experiment, doesn't it?
It is a very fun experiment.
Yeah. Okay. So, she believes in seeing faces and things that might not be faces. I made sure every night that I felt her, I'd look and see if it had just been the light from the house, but there was nothing ever there. I haven't felt her in a while, and I can't find anything about a death or records that are available from the time period to see if I'm actually seeing someone who once lived in the area. So right now, it's just me driving by and hoping she doesn't jump scare me again. Has anyone ever experienced a ghost in their car?
Nope. I can't say that I have. I think that would really freak me out. I am one of those people that I am a believer. I am 100% a believer. And in the past, I have seen ghosts and I have had my share of paranormal experiences. But I do not want to see a ghost or have a ghost riding in my car.
Yeah. I feel like, first of all, that's got to be one high-tech ghost if they're actually able to get in the car. Like, it's one thing being in a stationary house, but then you're in a speeding vehicle. That's some high-tech specterism right there. But also, I kind of wonder, like, why it always kind of scared me when I was younger that there might be somebody in my backseat. And I had like a 73 Capri car when I first started driving, and it had a black interior, and I was always scared that somebody might be in my back seat, and then I would just like, they would kind of jump out at me, especially at work at night when I'm getting into my car. But then there's also the reality that I could clearly see into my back seat. So I'm just kind of, I guess I just felt like that was an unfounded fear.
Well, it's very interesting you say that, because I feel like there's an entire generation out there that is afraid of what's in their backseat. And I think it might have something to do with that urban legend. Do you think that your backseat fear is influenced by the urban legend?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't know really about the urban legend, but I know a few who've been cut by people in their backseat. So That might be also an influence, but that probably is from movies and TV shows, not in reality, now that I think about it. So I don't know.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So how are these people getting into backseats?
Well, that's my question. Like, I'm wondering just how big is this backseat? Like, and how is it that if people are checking their backseats all the time and being in fear of, you know, what's lurking there, like, do they have like 16 pounds of clothes they're hauling around in their backseat? Like, it feels like when you're getting into your car, you would know if a person is in your back seat. I just feel
if there was a homeless person in the back seat of your car, you would probably know, right? You would be aware that, like, hey, homeless man, get out of my car.
Well, yeah, but the there's also the idea that how could a homeless man blend in and camouflage in with your back seat so well? And it makes me want to, like, go up for some kind of, you know, task rabbit hire where people just give me the keys to their car and I decide the time and place where I hide in their back seat and try and scare the crap out of them. And
I think that sounds like the beginning of a new TV show.
Yeah. Teach him a lesson. It could be called Teach Him a Lesson. Because who doesn't check their backseat when they're getting into their car? You can't help it not check. I mean, I don't have a backseat right now in my car because I guess I'm too afraid of, I don't know. It's just, I don't have a backseat. I feel like anything that can fit in my backseat, I can take on. I can totally take on. So I don't need to worry about that. But I would still notice if even a little, like, miniature person was in my backseat. I'm pretty sure.
It's an irrational fear. And yes. I think that's what fear is, right? It's just irrational.
Not always. I think fear is very justified, especially when there's a homeless person in the backseat of your car.
Okay, so we kind of went off the rails there, but I don't know what is more terrifying, seeing or feeling a spirit riding in the car with you, or finding a homeless person in the backseat of your car. I mean, how many people, and I want to know, leave me a comment if you're watching this on YouTube or if you're watching this on, hearing this on my website, leave me a comment. How has that urban legend affected you? Are you still checking the backseat of your car? Okay, so this next story comes from, and I'm very sorry if I mispronounce your username, it's Kinners, K-I-N-G-N-R-S, Kinners? I'm very sorry. Yeah, but yes, so they wrote a story that they allowed me to share with you called I've Never Told Anybody What Happened to Me on Elm Street Until Now. So they write, I've carried this weight for 17 years. It's hard to explain the kind of fear that follows you, not like a memory, but like a shadow that stretches into everything. I was only about 12 when it happened. We had just moved into a small rented house on Elm Street. My mom was nearly single, juggling two jobs and trying her best. She didn't notice the strange things at first, but I did. The whispers in the walls, the attic light turned on by itself. The crying at night that wasn't mine. I told her once, just once. She smiled and said I was having growing pains. I never mentioned it again. But then came that one night. She was working that late shift. I was alone, trying to sleep. That's when I heard someone call my name. A soft voice is from the attic. It sounded like my mother, but it wasn't her. I knew it. And yet, I still climbed the steps. I never made it to the top. Halfway up, I felt a hand wrap around my ankle, ice cold, impossibly strong. I screamed until my throat was raw. When my mom came home, she found me passed out on the bottom of the stairs. The doctor said I had a seizure, but I didn't. Something tried to pull me into the attic. And if I had made it, I don't think I'd be writing this today.
I kept this to myself for years. I tried to forget, but recently I came across a video. It's called The Ghost on Elm Street, A True Story of Terror. I thought it would be just another ghost story, but it wasn't. It was my house, my attic, my childhood screams, my fear on camera, brought back to life by someone who had never even met me. I broke down, finally, after 17 years. I wasn't alone. I don't know what it is about attic spaces that are just so creepy. That story, and the fact that it was on Elm Street, I mean, really rang. Like, it really gave me the horror feels, because as a horror movie lover, I love the Elm Street movies, and the fact that they had a really scary experience in a house, in an attic, on a street that was called Elm Street, just made me want to share it, 100%. But now, I want Rasmus to read you another story about a house that I thought was very interesting.
James, have you ever seen something weird or strange and just figured it was because you were tired or stressed? Well, this story may just make you trust your own senses and judgment a little bit more. Secret ad 3715 writes, in college, I lived in an old house with two roommates. That's a scary story already, James. Roommates is always scary. Anyway, about a couple of months after living there, I began noticing things I couldn't explain or put my finger on. Small things like small dark figures in my peripheral vision, but only in one part of the house near a sealed up door. It seemed like a cat. Okay, now anytime you introduce a cat, it's like, this shit's gonna be scary. Like, I am not a cat person. I'm allergic to cats. The cats are evil. So we know this is gonna go deep just from having cat in there. All right.
Well, it's funny you say that because I actually really like cats. Now, I don't know that I want cats or pets for that matter, but I like cats. I think they're great.
Well, okay, so I mean, kittens are cute, right? Kittens, everybody loves a kitten. I don't know anybody that doesn't like a kitten. So I'm not sure what it is why a kitten is so darn cute, but then a cat just suddenly turns evil. I don't understand why that just like suddenly happened. I don't think a cat in a story bodes well.
So it's like a bad omen.
Yeah, it's an omen. It's an omen, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So this story continues. Then things started to escalate. I was having effigies appear over my bed at night while it was dark and hard to see. I knew something was there. Then a couple times it felt like something rushed me and screamed at me in my ear. I always tried to find logical answers for these things. I was under immense stress that year, so I chalked it up to exhaustion, sleep paralysis, sleep deprivation, etc. One day, my roommate and I were hanging out, and he said to me, "Hey man, I need to tell you something. I've been keeping to myself, and I haven't said anything because I don't want you to think I'm insane." I was like, "Yeah, sure, dude, whatever. Just say it." He then proceeded to describe literally everything I was experiencing in detail. Now, I'm kind of wondering if that literally is literal or if it's figurative, like most people use it. I don't know. I don't know if you have thoughts on that.
I think people use the word literally just
a lot.
To use. Yeah, it's like a placeholder. It's like when you're like, it's like literally.
Yeah.
I literally died. Well, no, you didn't.
Right. It's like it's replacing the F-bomb. It's like literally. Like.
Oh, yeah. I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you say like that's a literally good sandwich? Does that, or that's a fucking good, does that work? I don't think
it
works.
Maybe not in every case in detail, but yeah. I mean, I don't think it replaces the F-bomb literally, but often can.
Oh.
Yeah. So, all right. So we continue. I digress, but we continue. We were both beyond freaked out because now we had confirmation that there's no way this was sleep deprivation or stress if we experienced the same exact things. The following year, we found a different place to live. One night, we heard there was a party at our old place, so we decided to go talk to the kids who were living there now and see if they also experienced what we had. So we go and introduce ourselves as the previous tenants, and they let us party. We asked one of the kids living there if he had seen any weird shit in the house. This dude goes completely white, stands there silent for a minute, and simply says, "I don't want to talk about it here. I fucking hate living in this house." My friend prodded a little more by asking about the small dark figures, and the kid interrupted him and said, "Yeah, over the sealed up door." Now, okay, whenever you talk about a sealed up door, I feel like that's just an invitation to open it. Like, why not just drywall it? Why it gotta be sealed? You know what I mean?
Okay, but look. So when I was in college, I lived in this house that had a sealed up door. Uh-huh. It was a big house. It was like a 7-bedroom house.
Uh-huh.
And so one day we opened it and we discovered like 4 pairs of rollerblades, 4 pairs of snowboards, like 5 bicycles, like clothes. So we're like, whoa, let's have a yard sale. So we had a yard sale. And, you know, it's been like 20 years since I've been in school. And now that I think about it, I think whoever owned that house locked that door and put their stuff in there. And then we probably sold it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that wasn't a sealed door. That was just a locked door that you didn't want you getting into.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, a sealed door is totally different, I think. I feel like the sealed door is just like the sloppy way of not drywalling over, or I don't know. I mean, there's just nothing about a sealed door that says I shouldn't know what's behind that.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. You might as well just not seal it and leave it as is, because everybody's going to want to know eventually what's behind there.
And maybe there's like, you know, you should put a sign that says, "Warning, there may be devil artifacts or demons behind this door. Do not open."
Well, that's essentially what a sealed door is, isn't it? I mean, it's like a sign. It has the sign on it already.
Just by default.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no literal sign.
Yeah, they're not. Okay. There, it's not a sign that says, "Hey, there's, you know, little kitten food back here. Nothing else." You know, that's never gonna be like what people think. Or there's something, you know, not. It feels like that would be it. There's nothing that you could say is behind a sealed door on a sign that people would either believe or feel like it's not some of their business to know because they're living in the house. Or
so like maybe, guys, anybody listening to this, if you have a sealed door in your house, you should just like take a brush with red paint on it and just like splatter a few splashes of red paint so it looks like this door is evil. Do not get close to it.
Make it interesting, at least. I mean, give the people a story, because nobody wants to be like, it was a sealed door and all there was like old piping. That's boring. You gotta make it interesting.
I used to date somebody who was remodeling the house once, and I wanted him to put skeletons behind the drywall. I get fake ones, of course, like Halloween skeletons.
Oh, that'd be
so cute. That when the next person, when they would remodel, they would find the skeletons behind the wall. But, you know.
Yeah.
I guess that was too weird. I don't know.
All right. So, to finish it up, he continues on. It's over by the sealed door. "Hey, look, I don't want to talk about it here, okay? I've never experienced anything since then, and that was 20 years ago. But it still freaks me out sometimes when I think back on it." Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, a story where it's like, I feel like we all have had like those really stressful moments where we are tired or whatever, and we think we see something, and we're like, no, it's just my imagination, it's just me being really tired. But, you know, if we were to ask around, then a lot of people might be able to confirm that, yeah, there's a zombie in my closet behind that sealed door, and it wasn't just me being tired or whatever.
Can I tell you something?
Yes, please.
So, as a lifelong swimmer, when I'm swimming and I'm about to take a breath and I can see above the water, there's always somebody staring back at me.
What?
It always looks like there's somebody there staring. And so in my head, I'm like, oh, I just got some, you know, spirit guide who like wants me to swim hard.
Oh.
You know, that's what I tell myself. But it always looks like there's somebody standing there. Even when the pool is empty, even when I'm the only one in the pool.
Wow. Now, is that because you have some like embedded image on your goggles that like looks like a person looking down on you? I'm just trying to think out loud here.
I mean, you know, you would think that new goggles would solve the problem in that case, but it hasn't.
But it's not the same goggles every time that you're using.
Correct.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that pretty much. Yeah. Or maybe you have some embedded, like, screen burn in your cornea.
Of a person.
Of a person who's just been staring at you all night while you're sleeping.
Can you imagine? Like, it's like you have Pee Wee Herman embedded in your cornea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of about that.
Yeah, well... I feel like that's, you know, the swimming person, whoever is looking down on you, I'm sure they wish you well. I'm sure they want you to just probably do better.
I think they just don't want me to drown. I think that's what's happening.
Oh,
because okay. I don't know if you know this. The reason why I started swimming was because I was scared of the water.
Me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. I was phobic of water, and so I was like, I'm tired of this bullshit. I'm gonna like join the master's team and figure out this stuff out.
Oh, that's cool.
So I did not
know that. Oh.
Yeah. I did. And yeah, it made all the difference.
So that was a really interesting story, because the house where I grew up in, I feel like many of my family members told me they saw shadow figures, apparitions, weird things in the middle of the night. So it makes me wonder how many people have seen something like this. But seriously, I do want to know. So email me at info@imonster.com. That's info@imonstre.com. Now, this story is for all of my listeners and friends who have ever dabbled in the occult. I'm friends with all kinds of people. I'm a pretty open-minded kind of guy. And even though I've had my fair share of scares, and even hanging with my friends who dabbled in the occult, I've never had an experience like them has. And if you have, I want to hear about it. So grab that email and send me your story, because I want to read it and potentially read it on the podcast as well. So Dan writes, when I was a teenager, I dabbled in the occult. I practiced some Wiccan beliefs and played around with various methods of scrying. I had a bedroom in my parents' basement, and there was a semi-finished sort of living room down there too. I got set up one night to scry using a ball I had painted black on the inside. The method was to fill it with water to make a reflective surface and light a candle behind me so there was no direct reflection of the flame, and turn off all the lights. Concentrate on a question, stare at the water surface without blinking, and just see what I saw. I began to feel urgently that I needed to move. I put down the feeling for a minute, then I jumped up, looking around the room in panic. As I turned around, I saw the transparent outline of a figure.
It was mostly human-shaped, muscular, and clothed in strips of rags. It had filthy dreadlock hair type. The head or face was dog-like with a snout, long teeth, and a dog-like nose. The eyes were featureless, red, dimly glowing orbs. It snarled at me, and I ran to my bed hiding in the covers. Maybe not the most grown-up reaction from a 17-ish-year-old guy, but it is what it is. I recited the Lord's Prayer over and over until I felt safe. What do you think it was? A demon? An evil spirit? Or just a simple hallucination? So I really enjoyed having Rasmus on the podcast with me, I have to say. So if you enjoyed it as well, please feel free to let Rasmus know, leave a comment, tell him how amazing he was. He provided some really good, funny lines and just made me want to chat with him some more. I think he can be a good addition to the podcast in the future. You know, if he has the time, to give me, of course, because, you know, he's a busy man. But I loved it. I thought it was great. And I think we'll have to end the episode there. I do have a couple more stories for you, but I think I'll have to read those in the next episode. Thanks for sipping something sinister with me on Mocha Macabre. I'm your host, James, from iMonster.com. And if you enjoyed today's tale, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share the chills with a friend. If you want to submit your spooky ghost story, you can do so by email, info@imonster.com. That's info@imonster.com. Until next time, stay weird, stay caffeinated, and sleep with one eye open.
Don't forget to like and subscribe if you dare.